Welcome to the playbook. I'm David Meltzer here at Web Summit in Vancouver. It's one of the greatest communities that I've been involved with for now over 20 years, and probably before you two were born, by the way. I'm co-hosting today with a special guest, the CEO and founder of Rocket Plan, the amazing local talent here, Joe Tolzman. Thanks for joining me.
Welcome to Vancouver.
Good. We'll give him a microphone in a minute. He said, welcome to Vancouver. More importantly, though, we are blessed with a New Yorker here all the way on the West Coast. She's enjoying the weather, I'm sure. But Irina Novoselsky, thank you so much for joining us, CEO of Hootsuite. What a pleasure it is. And what brings you all the way to the beautiful weather here in Vancouver?
Web Summit.
Web
Technology.
Summit.
Talking a little of tech, talking a little of Vancouver, some good food. You guys brought the weather. I appreciate it.
You have something I don't. You have your pulse on Gen Z. Really understanding. I'm a father of some Gen Zers.
You might have a bigger pulse.
I'm a boss of a few as well. But I think it's important to meet people where they're at. And I think every generation gets a bum rap. And the bum rap that I see is part of human nature. And it's always the newest generation, the previous generation have it easier than us, which means they're entitled. And I think it's bullshit. I travel like you. We see each other on the aisle in C2, 3, or 4B. But our bench is deep, especially in America. And I don't think that there's no drive in our generation, in Generation Z especially. I just think it's misunderstood because they're not doing the same things that we were doing. And for you, how do you articulate that difference in what they're doing is an activity, but they're very driven and successful in what they do. It's just so much different than working 9 to 5 or supposed to, for example, waking up early. That has nothing to do with how successful you are anymore. When I was young, absolutely, because all the jobs were 9 to 5.
And
they weren't worldwide.
Right,
right, in an office. So obviously, if you wake up early, you're going to be more productive. Give me some insight.
And it was more of a FaceTime culture, right? You needed to be there in front of your boss's face. And it was also, in many ways, I think there's some positives to that apprenticeship model, right? You got to see by doing, and I do think there's some trouble. But, you know, you nailed it in that they're doing things completely different. And different doesn't always mean bad.
Or lazy.
It's just different. And so I got curious. I saw this stat that over 70% of decision makers starting this year are going to be either Gen Z or millennials. And as a millennial, I got a little curious thinking we're the same. What could be the difference between me and Gen Z? I learned really quickly we're not the same. There's a lot of differences. And I went on the search and I met with over 500 Gen Zers, got to know them. And, you know, it's a little creepy when you're reaching out to trying to talk to 18 to 28-year-olds. Like, does anyone have a 22-year-old that I could talk to?
I got three.
Yeah,
right,
great. Add them to my roster. I'm happy to talk to them. But one of the things that you learn is they're a generation of contradictions. They grew up with a phone in their pocket and they want nothing to do with talking to you.
That's so
they
smart.
Don't want to email you. In fact, one of the number one courses that we even see at Hootsuite and when we onboard Gen Z is how to use email, because you know what they do? They type in @Irina and they're like, my email is broken. Which, to be fair, in their world, that is how they communicate with an @ handle, and email is just kind of archaic, right? Yeah. And so the way that they look at the world is in this very social first mindset. And so they will do a lot of work before they get on the phone with somebody. And we see this in their buying patterns, right? And so it is it's a generation that has a phone, doesn't want to use it, that wants to be in the office but doesn't want you to mandate return to office. It is an org that likes to work but on their time, in their style. And so we as an organization and just as employers of this generation have to change and adapt to what's happening, but even more importantly, as companies that sell to Gen Z and to companies that will be bought by Gen Z, the playbook is entirely different.
Which is good that we're on the playbook. What are your thoughts and your experience being in the contractor business?
Well, first of all, my daughter prefers text over call, but she still answers my calls, so I'm happy.
That's because
about
you're
that.
A parent. They're the only people that they answer calls to as parents.
Yeah, but anyways, I'm trying to evolve with the way the world is evolving, so I'm trying to make an effort and do text instead of calls. But in general, with business, like, we really got to understand what the generation is doing, what the world is doing, and keep up with it and just make it easier for people so it doesn't create resistance, creates better environment and more productivity.
And we see that too. I think the companies that are getting Gen Z, or, you know, because so many of the decision makers now within companies are Gen Z, how to get them to buy is actually put the decision making at their fingertips. So they no longer want these sales reps to cold call them or call or email them or do demos. They want, think about the world they grew up in. They grew up in the Netflix, Amazon world where they could go search themselves. They learn themselves. And one of the contradictions that our research shows is they're kind of viewed as this TikTok generation where they have a 6-second attention span. And yet, when you look at when they're making big purchase decisions, they're reading on average 13 forms of long form content.
Yeah.
So that, they're doing the work, just not the way that you expect them to.
That what works really well for us in our industry. We're in software business. We build the software for the industry that had little to no innovations. And younger generation just loves it. They can't keep up.
Because they can play with it.
Exactly. It's easy to use, easy to implement. And it's built for their mindset. So
yeah.
How do the Gen Z kids deal with diversity? Because there's so much separation today. And, you know, I'm on a mission being older in a legacy side of my life where I get to do what I want when I want with who I want. It's different.
The luxury.
It's a great luxury, which I earned, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm not shameful in saying that. Nobody gave that to me. And I had to lose over $100 million and go bankrupt in 2008 to get to where I am today. So there's a lot of struggle. But I'm having a problem because it seems beyond diversity, equity, and inclusion, I'm a big fan of equity of opportunity, but I don't believe people are equal. Just like these Gen Z are not equal to me, Uncle Dave generation. But I think I have a difficult time understanding where and how they perceive equality and appreciation of differences. And you talking to so many of these kids, for me, you know, how do they perceive this idea of diversity, equity, and inclusion? I don't think many people have a problem today with diversity and inclusion. It's the equity side that seems so fragmented, I would think.
Oh, interesting. From their perspective, how do you, what do you mean by that?
So for them, I think diversity is a given. Like, they're beyond where my generation, like, we don't even see.
They expect it.
Like, they don't say black quarterback. It's just black quarterback. And I think they're so pro-inclusion. You know, like, everyone should be included. That's the way I see it. But I think they have a real difficult time with their relationship with equity. Like, is it equity of opportunity, or are we all equal and everybody should be paid the same and treated the same? Yeah. Do they have a certain perspective that you found with that equity side of it?
Yeah, it's interesting because in my research, I kind of went in and thinking, okay, what you hear and what you read is it's a lazy generation.
Right.
And so I kind of went in with this like preformed thought. And as I met more and more of them, I don't find them lazy. I just think what they value is different than maybe previous generations. To your point of equity is I think their values are more about mental health, well-being, and they want to make enough money so that they can live okay and travel. Their biggest concerns are paying for their apartment and being able to travel. And so to your point of equity, there isn't this, I need to be number one at work. I need to be on this rat race. They want to add value. They want to be contributing. They want to be part of the team. They want to be valuable. But I think they view success in slightly different criteria than some of the generations before. And again, it's a massive generalization, and that's not always the case. But they're competitive, but not in the way against each other, in that they want to prioritize giving back to the community. They want to prioritize their own mental health. And so what they're willing to sacrifice for quote-unquote success is probably not the same as some of the generations that came before them.
Time to 1031 exchange my penthouse for like a cabin out in Whistler or
somewhere. I mean, travel is a big thing for them, right? Like having that ability to have remote work and contribute wherever they can is really important. But at the same time, if you mandate full remote, they're like, well, wait, we want to socialize a little bit. We want to come in. And so it's a little bit of this oxymoron that you have to deal with as a leader, of that you have to kind of offer both now.
Totally. Yeah. I think it's totally more advanced generation because they were brought up in a world of technology and things are running.
And recessions. And, you know, they kind of saw that even having money doesn't always get you what you want, and losing it. And it's so temporal.
And where the world is closer together. So they definitely grew up faster than we did, I feel.
Totally. One of the things, so at the end of every one of my interviews, I ask them, give me a word of how you think about the future, right? And when you think about when you're 25, if you were to mentally think about the word that you would summarize at 25, how you think about the future, both of you are smiling, so you're thinking probably positive thoughts. And out of the 500, maybe five had a positive word. Every single one of them was anxious, worried, concerned, scared. And it's these negative, like, they're a very anxious generation. They're worried. They're worried they're not going to have enough money to afford to buy a place to live. They're worried they're not, like, it's just, it's real anxiety that it's hard to talk to all these Gen Zers and think that they don't care or that they don't want to work hard. Like, they do. They're worried about very real things, that inflation is hurting them, that they can't buy the same kind of quality of life that their parents had.
Yeah, different world, different problems.
Mm-hmm.
And what about the idea of their relationships with parents? I have found it, my mom just passed, and that in the thing, but I was blessed to have her, raised six kids on her own. But my relationship with her was different, and she was a great mom. And there seems to be a different relationship with my wife and my four children and me and my four children. Did they give you any insight on how their relationships are different with their parents than yours?
Totally. And I think it goes beyond parents. I think it's with their bosses and in a work environment. Their expectation of what a relationship is really different. So I think the previous generations kind of, you had your personal relationship at home, and then you had your professional relationship at work. And in their perspective is, there's not that barrier, right? So they don't have a different way that they talk to their bosses than they talk necessarily to their friends. And at the same thing, like, their expectation of how they're going to be treated is also really similar. And so I think in many ways it's raising awareness of how leaders lead, that you're not just kind of leading machines, that stopping and asking for a minute, how was your weekend? And leading with kindness, I think, is actually can be a competitive differentiator for many people. And I do think that's an expectation that they are bringing to the workforce, that they're taking from kind of their personal relationships. But I think communicating with them, similar to how they communicate with their parents, you're not getting on these long phone calls with them.
Yeah, which, right? I like.
But like that, it's in many ways you do, and in many ways as a company is very difficult. And so, ironically, one of the ways that I find the best way to communicate with my Gen Z employees is actually when I post on social media. I have a weekly town hall, 15 minutes every Thursday. I feel like all I do is deliver the same kind of information, and nobody hears it. And then the minute I post about it on social media, most of my Gen Z employees are like, "Hey, I saw your post." And I was like, "Why do I even bother on the weekly stuff?" But it's how they consume information. It's on social. It's also why it's so important that if you're running a company, no matter what size, as an executive, you're out in front and center, because one of the things that's most important to them is authentic, real relationships, and they kind of don't want the BS anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting, because one of the greatest pieces of advice I had as a young executive in my 20s was treat your friends like your bosses and your bosses like your friends, which set me apart when I got the confidence to do that. I do think, just to finish up in relationships and with the interview, there's a difficulty in Gen Z in this remote but wanting an office, because as much as they don't see these clear differences, most people in their 20s at least, their social life was based off of the community at work.
Totally.
And you go from school in that community. So for me, being a father, I see the dating issues to be one of the greatest interferences or differences of the generations.
I mean, you see it with marriage rates going up, you know, having kids going, rates going down, kids going down. Like, people just aren't interacting on the same social level. And you're seeing it in other countries, not just in the U.S.
And it's hard. You know, to build a relationship, there becomes this more surface understanding, because when you're at work and then you're in the same struggle, and then you go out for a drink
after.
Yeah, you're
bonding over the common, like, pain.
And
totally.
You get to know someone that maybe initially there was no attraction to. If you saw, for example, I always joke around my wife, who I knew in the fourth grade. I go, "I know that when you looked at me, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, he is so handsome, I want to marry him." Now, when I looked at her, that's what I thought. And eventually I started dating her when I was 27 because she got to know me. And all of a sudden I got better looking. And I don't think relationships have that type of interaction or possibilities anymore. Yeah. What can we do to help facilitate some of the differentiators, the dichotomies, the oxymorons, the conflicts that these poor kids are suffering, to help resolve some of the mystery in their future?
Well, I think one of the things, I mean, it's happening at Web Summit. I think it's a little backwards. So in many generations before Gen Z, first you build a relationship in real life, and then you would take it to email or text or however you want to communicate.
Smart.
And in their generation.
Or phone.
Or phone.
Yeah.
God forbid, phone.
With call waiting, my generation.
I didn't have call waiting, thankfully. But they do it in reverse, right? They build a relationship on social. And one of the things that you now see, and I don't know if you see it in the tech world, we definitely see it in the tech world, but there is more of these need for conferences. There's more of the need for networking events. And so they're kind of flipping it. They start more on the digital world. They'll build a relationship, and then they'll take it to in real life. And it's that combination that I think for companies that really want to differentiate themselves, doing events more has actually become a more interesting opportunity. But the order is going to be different. You know, it doesn't start in real life.
Yeah, which is why we do so many VIP dinners, events.
And it works.
200 a year.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's why I'm on seat 3B, so we'll get to see each other. Exactly. Irina Novoselsky, she's the CEO of Hootsuite. We're going to have her back on to multiple shows. We just had to get to with her in person here in Vancouver at Web Summit. She is a shining star, a sun rising in her beautiful yellow outfit. She definitely stands out, and we appreciate her and all of your great leadership. Joe Tolzman, thanks for joining me. This is David Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.